The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 2:43 a.m., June 9th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Hello, thank you for listening to my show, K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. Well, they did it. It happened. The House voted on H.R. 10, the Financial Choice Act of 2017. The House voted to dismantle regulations on the banking industry, making it impossible to hold them accountable next time, which will now be sooner than later. They screw us. The bill passed 233-186. All the Democrats, even Joe Manchin, voted against it. Set the clock to our next financial crash now. The bill goes on to the Senate, so we must be sure to be on the line to our representatives now so that they know that a vote on this bill will result in votes at the ballot box in 2018. Let's see, the courts are in the resistance this week. Scott never met a seal pup he didn't want to slather in crude oil and strand on a melted iceberg while feeding small children lead paint. Pruitt's EPA has court battles lined up. Six conservation groups sued the agency Monday, arguing it had unlawfully suspended Obama-era rules intended to prevent methane leaks in oil and gas drilling. And it is not going to stop there. Seven states, along with still more activist groups, lodged an official objection on Tuesday to the EPA's decision to ban a pesticide despite the agency's own findings that the chemical is toxic. A coalition of seven attorneys generals charged the EPA with violating federal law by failing to issue required safety findings on chloriferous, common pesticide that causes well-documented harms to children's neurological development. You know, it poisons children and causes brain damage. The EPA generally faces a steady stream of lawsuits from industry, environmental groups, and state governments, regardless of who is president. But this week's legal challenges stand apart because they are direct responses to decisions the EPA has made under the poison-peddling Pruitt's leadership. Whether these legal challenges will meet with success remains to be seen, but they represent the first indication of what the legal opposition to Mengele Mussolini's administration EPA will look like. To be in the resistance is a gift. It is a gift because it means we are on the side of good, but it also means we possess certain qualities. One of those qualities is empathy.
Empathy.
1. The imaginative projection of a subjective state onto an objective so the object appears to be infused with it. 2. The action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experiences of another, either of the past or present, without having the feelings, thoughts, and experience the fully communicated in an objectively explicit manner. Also, the capacity for this. 3. What the GOP does not have. Empathy. The GOP budget and the GOP death care architects lack empathy.
When I learned that I had been fired, for that reason, I immediately came home as a private citizen.
All eyes were on Comey's hearing in Russiagate this week, exactly where Mitch, the turtle who wins every race, McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, wanted them. The GOP is stoked right now as all they are doing that should be drawing ire and backlash from all sides is not, because of the sensationalization of anything Cheeto-dusted. Now, I am not saying that Russia stuff is not riveting as hell and important, but what I am saying is the media needs to do a better job at balancing their coverage. The Republicans in the House this week started dismantling Dodd-Frank, one of our few lines in the sand preventing us from another world economic crisis, and I didn't hear a single journalist talking about it. It was all Comey all the time, and worse than that, it was all speculation about Comey, not even about the facts for most of the week. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Mitch Turtlechin McConnell is busy little worker fulfilling promises he made to his minority of supporters, according to Talking Points memo. Rule 14. This little rule. Rule 14 allows a bill to bypass committees and be sent directly to the floor without going through normal procedure requirements like the 2-day availability of a committee report prior to floor consideration. This little bugger is being used by Turtleneck to ram through the new revised healthcare bill. McConnell began the process under what is known as Rule 14, according to the Senate Minority Whip's office, to allow a repeal bill to be put directly to the Senate calendar so it is available for a floor vote when Republicans are ready to vote on it. Lest we forget. forget that the GOP senators have been hard at work in their closed-door meetings to hash out a deal that would secure 50 votes they'll need to pass legislation dismantling the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which they are pushing through a process known as reconciliation. More shadiness. Budget reconciliation refers to a process through which the Congressional Budget Act of 1974, in which congressional committees reconcile spending and programs within their jurisdiction to the budget blueprint passed by Congress. In this case, Congress passed a budget in January that required healthcare committees to report legislation reducing the deficit by $1 billion, the intended vehicle for an Obamacare repeal and replace bill. The Budget Act lays out specific time limits for debate in the Senate, 20 hours of debate, and limits amendments germane, for example, relevant, topics. Normally, debate in the Senate is much more of a freewheeling with unlimited debate and amendments permitted on any issue. A senator could offer an amendment on cereal policy to a tax bill, for instance. Basically, they are removing the Democrats' power to filibuster. Sneaky, sneaky. They are going to ram this sucker through as fast as possible. Obstacles be damned. Just like the House did. The only thing McConnell has to get done is the Congressional Budget Office score before the vote. Now, it may be better than the House bill. It may be. And it is true that we don't know what their bill is going to come out like. But one thing is for sure. If Ted Cruz is for this bill, it in no way can be good for the people. There's little the Democrats can do at this point. In fact, I don't see a thing the Democrats can do at this point. It is up to us. We are the only thing standing between the Republicans and our healthcare. Topher Spiro, health policy expert and fellow at the Center for American Progress, has been keeping accurate whip counts in both House and Senate on Trump care. He hears that McConnell will set Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, some of the more middle-of-the-road Republicans, off the hook on this one. He is ready to bring in Mike Mother Pence back in for a tiebreaker. So we need to focus on vulnerable senators Jeff Flake of Arizona and particularly Dean Heller of Nevada. There is also the wild cards, the maniacs, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Rand Paul. They could derail it from the other side, though Ted Cruz is one of the architects, so I'm pretty sure we can't count on him. We have done it before, and we will do it again. Call, write, go to offices, make our voices heard that we need healthcare, and they will feel the hurt come 2018 should they take such despicable and heartless action. I almost want to say, don't they care about the people? But I know better than to ask that. I am not saying this about all conservatives. Believe it or not, I do have conservative friends. They don't support Pixie Fingers or his administration, but I do have conservative friends. No. I am talking about these cold-hearted, money-grubbing, callous, racist fools who are in charge of our government right now. No, those people, those corrupt, opportunistic family values, righteous hypocrites who lack basic empathy. It is proven in their healthcare bill. It is manifest in their disregard for the poor, the environment, for good government, for what the people they represent really want, for the sick, the disabled, and the elderly. They have to be incapable of empathy because I have no other explanation for it. I am at a loss, and their lack of empathy hurts everyone, even those that should be most celebrated. One of America's greatest failures is its choice not to support our veterans in every way. There is plenty of lip service in the name of veterans, but little action of consequence. And as I talked about last episode, now the GOP plans to cut financial support for aging and disabled veterans, affecting an estimated 225,000 vets who could lose payments. Now, the threat of the Republican healthcare bill looms large for veterans, as Time reports. Millions of veterans can access health services via the VA, but not every former military member qualifies for care there. Plus, long wait times and backlogs have caused many to choose to not use the organization's services. Veterans will get hit hard in other ways, too. A 2015 survey from the nonprofit Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America found that 58% of respondents reported having a mental health injury due to their service. Decreasing mental health coverage for Medicaid enrollees in GOP care could be detrimental for vets who suffer from mental issues like PTSD and are at higher risk of suicide than the general population. And the House's plan removes the requirement that Medicaid programs cover essential services, including mental health, substance abuse, and behavioral health services. Are the AHCA's changes a reflection of a bigger cultural shift, where veterans and their needs are becoming less visible? When do they become more than talking points to those in power? The idea that this country can't afford to provide for its vets is absurd on its face. How about we prioritize our vets and our serving soldiers within that bloated defense spending package? Why not stop giving billions to private contractors who charged $1,000 for a hammer and instead give it to the people putting their lives on the line and to those who have served their country? And I have to say it, while I am fantasizing, why don't we put an end to this endless war machine and stop risking the lives of our young women and men in battles for oil? There will be battles worth fighting, and there will be necessary wars. It is a sick and sad truth of human nature, but regardless of the nature of the war we are sending people to, the least, the very least we can do is take care of them when they come home. Shame on the Republicans. Shame on all of us for looking the other way. We must do better. On my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, you will find a link to a page that collects charitable veterans organizations should you like to donate. Also on my page, you will find a video by Five Finger Death Punch called Wrong Side of Heaven that friend of the show Steve sent me. It is about our veterans and includes important and devastating facts about the state of things in the United States. It's well worth a watch.
We'll withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
Well, Prima Donald has kept his promise to the approximately 37% of Americans who seemingly, no matter what, can find no fault in the creature. And, as we know, pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. I am pretty sure that the majority of his supporters believe that the Paris Climate Accord is actually about Paris. This action of Donald's has become a call to arms. At the beginning of this week, about 100 businesses, 80 university presidents, 3 governors, and 30 mayors announced their intention to stick with the Paris program, with Bloomberg leading the way. Bloomberg predicts that this joint effort could still reduce America's contribution to greenhouse gas emissions by 26% from 2005 levels by 2025. Bloomberg said in a statement, quote, "Americans are not walking away from the Paris Climate Agreement. Just the opposite. We are forging ahead. Mayors, governors, and business leaders from both political parties are signing onto a statement of support that we will submit to the UN, and together we will reach the emission reduction goals the U.S. made in Paris in 2015. Americans will honor and fulfill the Paris Agreement by leading from the bottom up, and there isn't anything Washington can do to stop us." Unquote. Bloomberg makes the point that to effect political change, we, the people, need to reach out to the mayors.
When it comes to government, the federal government really is missing in this battle. State governments are almost all missing. But city governments with mayors are the real participants on a government level. Why? Because the public knows how to get in touch with their mayor. And they call up and say, "My kid just had to go to the hospital with an asthma attack. I want clean air, and I'm holding you responsible." Problem is that people at the federal and state level, they don't ever get down to the level of actually understanding and having to do with it. The good news is we are going to make the COP21 goals without the federal government.
Putting his money where his mouth is Michael Bloomberg, who has pledged up to $15 million to cover America's financial commitment in the Paris Climate Accord. All this comes down to one point. The irony that Herr Führer, out of sheer political stubbornness, may have inadvertently reignited the spirit that made this nation great in the first place. And the little things. According to Marketplace, regardless of the fact that America has no interest in buying fuel-efficient cars, go America! The cars coming out of the assembly line in Detroit are largely fuel-efficient. And that is for two reasons. China and California. China is a huge market who is pushing for higher fuel efficiency standards. And in California, where the most popular cars are a Prius and has strict environmental standards. So, from green businesses to green states to green countries, we will save this earth despite the president and the Republican Party.
They wanted so much money that my mom had to take the house that my grandma owned for 32 years, and she had to put it as collateral for my brother because we didn't have the money.
As a public defender, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been told to call the woman in the family, right? The mother, the grandmother, the girlfriend, the wife, the sister, whoever, to try and see if they could get the bail together. Probably 90% of the time I was given the name of a woman to call.
Criminal justice. I want to talk about one aspect of criminal justice right now. Joe is arrested. Joe drives to the court, and the judge sets bail. We'll call it $3,000. Joe can A, pay the bail out of pocket, B, go to a bail bondsman, put down a deposit, and have them pay the bail, or C, go to jail regardless of not having been convicted of the crime yet. The problem here being that, in America, Joe is supposed to be innocent till proven guilty, yet he will be serving time not for the crime, mind you, but for not paying his own ransom, essentially. Joe ends up paying out of pocket because Joe's dad has money, so Joe is fine. Al, however, rode the bus to court. Al does not have money. Al can't miss work because Al has two jobs, so Al can't go to jail. Al has no choice but to choose B. He goes to the bail bondsman.
My baby son, when he was arrested, his bail was like $300,000. And there was no way that we could even conceive of paying it.
Before even being convicted of a crime, Al and his family, usually the woman of the family, is forced to pay a non-refundable deposit to the bail company in exchange for his release from jail. This practice of forcing people to buy their freedom is reminiscent of the time when slaves and their families had to do the same. It has been a part of American culture for centuries, and it is now being exploited by the bail bond industry.
For years down the line, even if the person is acquitted and the charges are dropped against them, you still owe that money.
It's not like you're going to get it back from the bail bondsman. If you put up your house and that person doesn't show up, you lose your house.
Bail insurers are for-profit entities. They're predatory. They prey on those entering into the criminal justice system and trap them in debt through high fees and installment plans. These profiteers coerce the people into signing over their property rights. And when it is not profitable, they leave the people in jail. And of course, this disproportionately affects people of color, as does everything in the criminal justice system. As Colors of Change puts it, big bail insurance companies profit off the backs of our nation's most marginalized Black communities. In addition to the over $9 billion wasted to incarcerate people who have been convicted of no crime, pre-trial incarceration has catastrophic impacts on the families and communities. Just a few days in jail can cause irreversible harm and force people to lose their job, their housing, their children, and in the cases like Sandra Bland, even cause them to lose their life. There is a push to abolish the for-profit bail industry as a crucial step to ending mass incarceration. Big bail companies have one major goal: to continue profiteering from the arrest and caging people. They do not care if these people are innocent, if jail conditions are inhumane, or if bail bondsman practices mimic predatory lending. This profit over people's sentiment is why corporations should not be gatekeepers of a person's pretrial detention and release. According to the Justice Policy Institute, there are approximately 1,500 bail bond agents working in the United States, writing bonds for about $14 billion annually. Bail bond companies take billions from low-income people. Backed by multi-billion dollar insurance grants, the for-profit bail bonding industry maintains its hold on pretrial systems through political influence. I'm beginning to think that the root of all evil is money in politics. Yeah, money. But money in politics.
If you can afford to make bail, you're suffering. If you can't afford to make bail, you're suffering. Because you're going without, in my case, a father.
If the system is fair, money should not play a role in it.
I put a petition up on my K Voice of Resistance page at K Voice of Resistance if you are interested in signing it to put an end to this corrupt system. I have a prescription for everyone.
I used to want to save the world. This beautiful place. But the closer you get, the more you see the great darkness within.
Go see Wonder Woman. DC, which competes with Marvel, does not have the best track record when it comes to their movies, but this one nails it. I had reservations. I was not happy with the waify actress they cast in the role.
Wonder Woman is muscular and curvy, dang it. Stupid American standards of beauty. Who is this chick in her Pilates body?
Of course. This is before I learned that the actress used to train Israeli forces. This film not only was starring a female superhero, it was directed by a female director. I don't know if you know how big this is. The old white men who run the money in Hollywood finally allowed a female to direct an action movie. Lexi Alexander broke the glass ceiling in 2008 when she directed Punisher Warzone. She said, quote, "I think in industries riddled with bias, you tend to hire women only if their previous work is very masculine," which is hilarious given that this is not how male directors are chosen. Women have to be one of the boys to get in the superhero business, whereas male directors don't have to have any proof in their resume that they can deliver hardcore action. Unquote. The bias does not stop at action movies. It is hard in general as a woman to get work as a director, and if you're a woman of color, you really have a struggle ahead of you. Patty Jenkins, the director who previously was known for directing Monster, had a lot of pressure on her. If this movie was a hit, it could possibly open the door a crack for other female directors. But if it was not, it could slam the door shut for another 10 years. I was nervous. I was nervous going to see it because I wanted it to be good. I needed it to be good. Not just the feminist in me, but the kid in me. A female superhero film. I wanted to be inspired in the way only a superhero film can. I was going to be able to identify with the superhero on the screen on a different level. It may sound silly, trivial, even trite, I suppose. And it's hard to explain in any meaningful way other than to say, it feels good to have someone of your own gender saving the world. Much how I'm sure it feels to be a black kid and watch Luke Cage, the black Superman of sorts with his bulletproof skin, a one-man force for justice. Or a black girl to watch Storm bending the force of nature to her will. Sadly, as of yet, no films have been made starring an ethnic superhero, but it's only a matter of time. They're already in the works. Girls are taught, if not explicitly, then at least peripherally, that a man will be the hero. A man will save the day. There has been a shift in this occurring in the past decade as princesses have shucked the man and saved the day to themselves. But in the scheme of things, this is only a recent push in any sort of mainstream way to show a woman can be a hero too. Women and female superheroes in particular, haven't always been treated well in the world of comics. For every genuinely strong, well-rounded character, it seems like three vacuous, self-obsessed damsels in distress pop up and ruin any sort of progress. For years, women were largely relegated to one of three roles in comic books: the victim, the blonde bombshell, or the villain. For that matter, the same can be said of the casting of women in entertainment in general. The first true female superhero made her debut in 1940. Phantoma, mystery woman of the jungle, who used her supernatural powers to punish those who would threaten the jungle or its inhabitants, transforming from a beautiful young woman into a horrifying blue-skulled monster. Phantoma was a symbol of terror and justice, even if it meant that some of her other traits weren't quite as well defined as other superheroes of the era. But hell, we had to start somewhere, right? It has been a long road to equality in the comic book world, let alone the world we are still in, and we are still far from it on both accounts. Believe it or not, comic books and superheroes have a large female fan base. Yet, the sexism in the comic book world and the gaming world can be pervasive, abusive, and dangerous. If you're not a fan of comic books or interested in the culture, you may be thinking, why is she going on about this? There are more important things to be talking about. And, well, maybe there is. But maybe this is a conversation about fundamental values as Americans. Superheroes are uniquely American. While comics and superheroes are no longer solely an American property, the invention of these things says a lot about our culture and the attitudes of our culture. They have evolved through time with us, celebrating our history, our culture, our story. Not unlike the Greek mythology of Zeus, we have our heroes and our villains showing the best of us and the worst of us. Comic books have chronicled our history and touched on World War II, the war on drugs, climate change, and the current climate of terrorism. Long after we are gone, this mythology will live on. I believe this invention of something that is so big, so great as a superhero, is part of American sense of the grand. It is partially tied to our American exceptionalism, our ego, and bombast. Yet, it is also a testament to our collective desire to save the world on some level. As our mythology has spread across the world, it comes stamped with our own American history and evolving culture. The good news is, it is largely the better part of our culture. The love of the hero is personal, and it can teach us and children to be our better selves. And isn't storytelling as old as time? Isn't that the vehicle through which humans have taught right and wrong across cultures throughout history? In John Romanello's piece, Understanding Heroism, A Look at Modern Mythology and the Super Appeal of Superheroes, he explains, quote, "In all hero stories, particularly those in monomythic tradition, the hero is identifiable immediately as an extension of the self. As a reader, you are inexorably drawn to the hero, learn the things as he learns them, see the story from his perspective. Eventually, you identify with him. We identify with the hero for a few reasons, not least of which is that we want to be heroic. The hero is relatable because he stands for everything we would love to stand for, embodies everything we would like to be seen in ourselves." Unquote. But heroes are more than just characters. They go on a hero's journey. The hero's journey, the very structure of which can be found in every culture at any point in history. It is called the monomyth, which if you're unfamiliar with, or have forgotten your sophomore year English studies, it is worth looking up. But the basics are, the hero starts out on a call to adventure or journey, then bottoms out in the abyss. It is the death and rebirth, and finally, a return home. The fact that nearly every culture tells stories in the same way says something about the collective mindset of humans as a whole. The structure satisfies something innate in us. The way that heroes emerge, evolve, and complete their journey is more than a story. It's an emotional need that every person is attracted to on a deep level within the psyche of humanity itself. In such a way, we can connect our cultures to every other culture, and perhaps this could be a path to enculturating the world. As superheroes have evolved throughout time, they have grown into more flawed, darker characters. Their personal struggle to do right, not wrong, to do good despite aspects of their nature, to temper their anger, to not seek revenge, but justice. It is a personal struggle that, despite their ability to fly or punch through walls, is perfectly human and relatable. And now, in a very real way, we are bringing such heroes to every little girl and saying, you too can save the world. You too have darkness and will struggle, but you can conquer that and be great. And not just in gender equality, but the comic world has a potential to start normalizing the other. And Wonder Woman, if you don't know, as the creator-designer, is bisexual. He joked, she is from an island of all women. Of course she's bisexual. Dr. William Moulton Marston, who himself lived with their wife and their girlfriend. Even after his passing, the wife and the girlfriend stayed together. The three of them created Wonder Woman together. And fun fact, Marston created the lie detector, which also explained Wonder Woman's lasso of truth she uses to elicit truth from her targets. So cool. Anyhow, we disappointingly did not see any of this bisexuality in the movie, but I suppose it was breaking through enough cultural bonds without throwing that into the mix. Not only has this movie been under fire from the sexist hordes, it has been under fire from the right, because she does not wear the classic red, white, and blue, from the white supremacist, because she is Jewish and a woman, and the film has been banned in Lebanon because the actress is Israeli and served in the mandatory service in Israel. So it has been weathering a lot of storms. So how did it turn out? Brilliantly. It has grossed $300 million worldwide and climbing. It is well reviewed, and as for me, I enjoyed every minute of it. I cried, it made me laugh a lot, actually, and I was inspired. Isn't it enough just to ask for a little inspiration here and there? It was barely a love story, which I appreciated, and for every little boy out there, they'll appreciate it too. So I'm prescribing everyone a night to go have a good time and escape with a kick-ass superheroine and a great film. Okay, that is all the time I have for today. Thank you for listening to my show, K-Voice of Resistance, on crabdiving.com or your favorite podcasting app. Go to resistancecalendar.org to find resistance going on near you. Catch your news with the Crab Diving Podcast 5 days a week on crabdiving.com, iTunes, or Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter, @KellyTheVoice. Follow me on Facebook, K-Voice of Resistance. As Wonder Woman says, quote, "If it means interfering in an ensconced, outdated system just to help one woman, man, or child, I am willing to accept the consequences." Unquote. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
How can a woman possibly fight in this?
Fight? We use our
principles, although I am not opposed to engaging in a bit of fisticuffs should the occasion arise.